Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager, and this is my home, and I've been spending a lot of time in my home, I might add. I should have been in Hungary, where I was supposed to give a speech, but of course, very few of us are going anywhere, although I do go into the radio station to do my radio show every day, but here I am at home, and this is my weekly fireside chat, my fire, the side of the fire, my doggy, who is, I don't know, for whatever reason, very alive and awake today. I have no idea why. He's usually so placid that I have reassured people it's not a stuffed animal. But now you really see Otto at his prime. Anyway, this is a very rare time, in fact, unprecedented time, certainly it's unprecedented. I don't know when certainly any industrialized civilization or even non-industrialized has ever gone into lockdown as so many societies have in the world today. So I want to, before anything else, I just want to share with you some thoughts, because a lot of people have written in and I said certain things which people are challenging, which is perfectly all right. You should challenge. It's a very good thing. Then you hear the answer and you either find it persuasive or not persuasive, but if you don't find it persuasive, let me know why. So I commented in the last fireside chat about a comment made by the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, and it basically saying, if everything I have done, in other words, shutting down all of New York State, if everything I have done saves one life, I am happy. That's pretty much exactly his words. And I thought that that was absurd. That is morally absurd. It's rationally and morally absurd. You are causing havoc in millions of people's lives. You are depriving millions of people of an income. You are putting people who live alone into solitary confinement. And all of that is worth it to save one life? It's so preposterous to me that I realize we are in an age that doesn't have much wisdom. I mean, I have studied moral thought my whole life. I have written books on it. I'm certainly capable of being wrong on these matters, but I have never met a religious or secular moral philosopher who has ever said that you can deliberately create massive destruction like that to save one life. It's as I pointed out, no social policy has ever been made that way. And I gave the example of speed limits. When we in America have gone from 55 to 65 miles per hour, let alone to 75, it is known. I remember at the time talking about it. Otto is definitely, he's leaving. I think this discussion might have gotten to him. But then, look, he wants to leave. You got to let him go. One thing you cannot do is force a bulldog to do anything, which is why they're known as bulldogs. They're very stubborn. That's the other door, and we're good. All right, Otto, anytime you want to come back, you let me know. Okay, I'm sorry, folks, sitting next to an empty bed, an empty dog bed. It's sad. Anyway, the speed limit, every time it is raised, they know X number of people will die as a result. So I would ask any of you, should we have the speed limit at 30 miles per hour? On highways, for example, then we will presumably save thousands of lives. And that's the speed limit. That's not jobs. That's just the speed limit. But of course, we don't do that. We always ask, while every individual is infinitely precious, we also ask, what is better for the whole society? You can't make social policy on what might adversely affect one person. I don't know why this is not self-evident, so I won't spend more time on it. Somebody wrote in a question about that. Was it on the other sheet? Here we go. Begins with, which is sort of a cutie way of putting this question. The number of people who will die is a factor that impacts whether or not it is appropriate to raise the speed limit. Don't you think that is why we don't have unlimited speed limits? Yes, that is why we don't have unlimited speed limits. What's their point? It's also why we don't have 30 miles per hour. So we have tried to find a sort of happy medium, knowing more people will die at 65 or 75, but not allowing unlimited. And by the way, in Germany, on the Autobahn, they do allow unlimited. So what do you say to that? Do the Germans not care if Germans die? We are still able to go out for essential needs, and if we are mature, hopefully this will pass flat line, similar to how it has in other nation situations. There is no other nation situation like this. We don't know what will be afterwards, except tremendous havoc. I was just reading a piece in the New York Times, which, as I said on my radio show, it came close to bringing me to tears. And other than music, there's not much that brings me to tears. And it was about people already relapsing into addiction and alcoholism, because the worst possible thing for a recovering addict is to be alone, not have access to AA meetings, and to be anxious. This is like the perfect storm to resume drinking. A woman called my radio show. Her 30-year-old son, who had been sober a few years, has already gone back to drinking. He has nothing to do. Boredom is a very, very scary thing. I've talked about this often in my life. And so here's the irony. I acknowledge the possibility of tens of thousands of deaths. I mean, once we reach hundreds of thousands, then I agree. Oh, we could talk about that, but I acknowledge the possibility. But you who are on the other side on this, you have to acknowledge the tragedies that the quarantine creates. I have a 94-year-old aunt whom I love very much, who lives in Florida. And she had a full-time caretaker. The full-time caretaker no longer comes because the full-time caretaker is quarantined with her family. My aunt, my 94-year-old aunt, who is mentally perfectly there, but is physically in decline, she is alone. She will have ended up being alone for 2 months. Solitary confinement. I can't stop thinking about my aunt. I call her up, I try to cheer her up and so on, but I'm not there. I mean, that's a big deal. You know how many people are in solitary confinement now? You know, and of course the number of people in nursing homes who can't see or anywhere who aren't seeing their children or grandchildren. Please don't act like this. The price being paid for what with the cure is not ferocious. Now, if you believe 2 million people are at stake, then I understand why you would say, look, we're going to hurt a lot of people's lives, but it's worth it because 2 million people would otherwise die. I've never believed that. I don't believe it now. And by the way, let me read to you something. This is from Anthony Fauci, who is the head of the entire issue in the United States of America. March 26th, 2020, New England Journal of Medicine, one of the two most prestigious journals of medicine in the United States. If one assumes that the number of asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic cases is several times as high as the number of reported cases, the case fatality rate may be considerably less than 1%. Does that make sense? In other words, what percentage of people who have the virus die? This is Anthony Fauci writing in the New England Journal of Medicine this week. Well, apparently, it's way less than 1%, the mortality rate. The head of the World Health Organization said a few weeks ago it was 3.4%. That was hysteria. I said it then. I call it the World Hysteria Organization. This suggests that the overall clinical consequences of COVID-19 may ultimately be more akin to those of a severe seasonal influenza or a pandemic influenza rather than a disease similar to SARS or MERS, which have had case fatality rates of 9 to 10% and 36% respectively. In other words, this is basically a severe flu season. Anthony Fauci, New England Journal of Medicine. More, needless to say, as they say, look it up. COVID-19, Navigating the Uncharted. It's by Anthony Fauci and two other medical doctors. Here's something else for you to consider that I'm sure most of you are not even aware of. There is a major industrialized Western democracy that is not quarantining its people. Sweden. Which I am stunned, by the way. I am just stunned. I was sure Sweden would go the way of every other Western nation in this regard. But they didn't. They feel that if people who are vulnerable, the very elderly or anyone with an underlying condition, will self-quarantine, which would be the wise thing to do for such people. But that otherwise, if you eventually you just develop so many people with who are immune that the society can function. Because the vast majority of people who get the virus don't even know it. They might think they have a cold or even nothing. So let's watch Sweden. If quarantining is saving millions of lives, as many of you might believe, then Sweden must, obviously proportionally, Sweden has 10 million people. The U.S. has 330 million people. So this is, what is it, one thirtieth or one thirty-third. All right. So what is 1/30th of 2 million? It's still a vast number of people. And let us see what happens in Sweden and compare it to Norway, which has half the number of people, but compare it, similar country, to Denmark. These people did quarantine. What if it ends up that it's the same as a seasonal flu? And I keep reminding people, Why don't the media put up a chart every time they put up a chart with regard to the coronavirus? Why don't they put up a chart with regard to the regular flu? Between 30 and 50,000 Americans have died this season from the regular flu. 80,000 died of the flu last time. If 80,000 died of this, everybody would say, lock down, lock down. Why? Why not lock down for the other flu? So, I wanted to make a lot of things, these things clear. None of us knows the exact right answer. We're not God. But we do have to think rationally and morally at the same time. And by the way, what if there's another virus in 2 years? Is this now a precedent? This is what we do every time? When the president of the United States, Donald Trump, mentioned that hydroxychloroquine might be a possible cure for many people, he was mocked by the entire American media, virtually the entire American media, certainly all the left. They mocked him. Turns out now that the FDA has said, yes, the Food and Drug Administration, yes, use it. Just 2 weeks after he said that, yes, use it for the coronavirus. Anybody apologizing? Don't start me on that one. This is the other thing I must deal with. So it shows people sacrificing grandpa. Can you see that? Is that clear? See, grandpa's heart is being removed, like in an ancient pagan rite. In South America or Central America. I'm surprised they would even allow that. Why isn't that, considered to be anti-indigenous people? But anyway, so what does it say? Now look here. So it shows the economy. Ah, that's the star. That's the sun. That is the god. And for the economy god, they're sacrificing grandpa. See, Trump and the coronavirus, and that's grandpa. So this is a very common thing. Here, I'll give you another one. Here is a tweet. Let's see. Capitalism 2020, you should be willing to die in order to save the economy for the top percent. So here's the irony. The top percent are minimally affected. People who have, you know, the top percent, or if we're talking about people with $100 million or more, $50 million, $1 billion, it doesn't matter. They're not the affected. The affected is the lowest class. You are heartless if you think that the economy issue is an economy issue for the rich. You are foolish and you are heartless. You are mean because you hate Trump. It has made you mean. The people most affected economically are not the rich. The people most affected economically are the poor and the middle class. This is all over the place. The left, look, as opposed to liberals I think are wrong, but I respect, but the left is vile. This is a perfect example of how awful these people are. They don't think clearly and they're mean. Do you not know who is really affected? You think that the people in luxury apartments in New York City are affected? How are they affected? It's the people who are affected. The people who here like an example of a guy who was telling my wife he prints advertisements, but no companies are advertising. The man is now out of business. This notion, which a lot of you think, apparently from the email we get, oh, it'll just come back hunky-dory. Really? Why will it come? People who are out of business are out of business. That's not the way things work. I'll have no income for 2 months from the business that I spent 10 years building, and then everything will be fine. It doesn't work that way. It takes a long time for everything to be fine. And by that time, you have not made enough money. You have lost your business, your restaurant, your printing company, or whatever it might be. What are wedding photographers doing right now? Okay? I can go down the line of virtually every profession outside of the super rich. What is a wedding photographer going to do? There are no weddings. So what is a wedding photographer supposed to do for income? You think they're rich? I know these people. Think wedding photographers are rich? They live from wedding to wedding to make a living, but they love photography and they do that work and they're good at it. Uber drivers, what has happened to their income? So few people are working. What about all the people who work at the airports? The airports are essentially empty. And you're telling me super rich? That those of us who care about the economy care about the wealthy? It's because of the sick Marxist nonsense that you have learned, which makes you mean. You don't care about the regular guy. You just so hate the wealthy that you don't care about the regular guy. Or you so hate Trump. Here's another one that was supplied to me from a guy named Actually Malicious. No, Actual Malicious, which is true. He knows. No, Actual Malice. Yeah, he knows himself. I have to say that. Conservatives in 2010, OMG, they're going to make death panels and allow old people to die to make the system more efficient. They're going to kill my grandma. Conservatives in 2020, if 8 million people die, that's okay because they're expensive to keep alive and not productive. Right, 8 million. It's up to 8 million. While I'm talking to you, what is the number? What was the number of deaths in America?
Almost
3,000. Again, I remind you, the flu this season has killed between 30 and 50,000. 2 years ago, 80,000. Okay. And by the way, for those of you who say, well, it's because of the quarantining, maybe you're right. Maybe you're not right. Let's look at Sweden. Sweden's the test case. All right, we begin with a video question. And there we go, the magic press. Hi.
Hi, my name is Pammy. I'm 20 years old. I'm from Ohio, and I'm a member of Prager Force. My question is, do you believe that it's wrong for states to mandate religious institutions stop congregating during the pandemic? And to follow up on that, do you believe that the religious institutions themselves have an obligation to stop congregating during the pandemic? Or does faith supersede the risk of the pandemic spreading? Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That's a lot of questions. You got three in there. Well, it is a very tough question. I don't know the answer on all of this. I don't know when the state has the right to close businesses. Forget closed churches. I don't know the answer. See, it seems self-evident in a health emergency, the state can do whatever it wants. But what if a bad guy, a bad president, a bad governor, or a bad whatever, just says there's a health emergency and decides to shut down society? I don't have a terrific answer for this. These are things that will have to be asked, however. As regards churches, it's another very good question. I don't know what the constitutional issue says. Clearly, to answer your third part, yes, or your second one, synagogues and churches have the obligation, of course, to take care of their members. My own view is, to a certain extent, depending on the circumstances, I think in a free society, you allow people to take risks. It's amazing how the ease with which we've legalized marijuana, which I have no doubt in my mind affects young people's brains. There is no doubt in my mind. Every piece of evidence I've ever read. But the cavalier, oh, let's legalize marijuana. Look, for that matter, let's legalize alcohol. Alcohol kills more people than almost anything because of the traffic deaths due to drunk drivers, the number of crimes committed by people who are intoxicated, the amount of spousal abuse that happens when someone's drunk, the amount of child abuse that happens when someone's been drinking. Yet we allow people to drink. At great cost. That's, by the way, a good example. If I could prove to you that banning alcohol, as was done in the Prohibition in the United States in the 1920s, if I could prove to you that banning alcohol will reduce crime, will reduce child abuse, will reduce spousal abuse, would you be for it? Why not? Because you believe in freedom. So you are, all of those against prohibition on alcohol are saying, oh, okay, well, let's let some people die. Right? Okay. Brooke, 28, Marshall, Minnesota. What's our time factor here?
24.
How will we act in the future going forward if this happens again? Will shutting down the country be our new norm for virus outbreaks? I fear that. I do fear that. But I don't know. I don't know the answer to your question. It will depend on what people believe. How many lives did we save? If it's truly a million or more, or even half a million, then people will say maybe it was truly worth it. And I would. At that number, I would say it was worth it. But if they're not convinced that's what would have happened, and if they see the decimation to people's lives caused by the shutting down of people's lives, the loneliness, the depression, the addiction, the opioid use, and of course the bankruptcy. I don't know why India shut its country down. India had, I think, 29 deaths when Prime Minister Modi decided to shut the country down. And vast numbers of people do not have food the next day. there's a poor country, India. It's got a rising middle class, but it's a poor country. I've been to India 4 times. And I worry about that. What are these people going to do? As a man quoted in the New York Times in India said, I rather get the virus than die of starvation. 35-year-old guy. Because the chances are if he gets the virus, he's not going to die. But what's going to be with his life now? Isaac 23, Irvine, California. Should we hold China responsible for the coronavirus? What is China? Do we hold all Chinese responsible? Of course not. It didn't come from Armenia. The idea that we don't hold China at all responsible is an extremist view. The idea that we hold all Chinese responsible is an extremist view. But yes, more than once it has originated in China. It is largely, apparently, these wet markets where these animals in filth and squalor are digested. They should be shut down, these wet markets. Look up the wet market, because we don't have that in the West as a general rule. And they are a very serious problem health-wise to the world. And that's why it's certainly not racist to call it the Wuhan virus, for example. We call viruses based on where they originated, as a general rule. I assure you that if it originated in Nashville, Tennessee, we'd call it the Nashville virus. Noah, Stephenville, Texas. Is the quarantine an infringement of our First Amendment right to peaceably assemble? Well, I mean, it's every right. That's not the only right. That's my question. I don't know. I think it's going to have to be worked out in the courts. It's a very tough question.
Dennis, talk about scientists.
Oh, yeah. So let me end with that, because we have a non-corona related question. So I mentioned something on my radio show that Megan thought was worth mentioning to you. And Megan runs this show. So there is a... It's a very interesting thing. I have understood life my whole life, and I really believe I've been vindicated, that with the death of religion in the West, it doesn't mean there's no religion. People simply have created secular religions for God-centered or Bible-centered religions. That's all that's happened. There's no such thing as no religion. Or as Chesterton put it, at the end of the 19th century, is a great line. When people stop believing in God, they don't believe in nothing. They believe in anything. So it's a brilliant line. It's exactly what has happened. So what we have is, in religion, you have priests, right? Ministers, priests, rabbis. And they are as it were, the clergy, the spokesman of the religion to the lay population. So what has supplanted religion? If you ask a lot of atheists, what do you believe in? I know their answer because I've debated them. You could see it on the internet. I've talked to them on my radio show for 30 years. Science. That's what they'll answer you. We believe in science. Okay, fine. So guess what? Let's ask the question, who are the priests, rabbis, and ministers of the religion called science? Answer, scientists. That's the clergy. So they have the role that the minister had in people's churches, the priest had in people's Catholic churches, and the rabbis had it in the Jewish synagogue. They are the spokesman of the religion. So scientists have this special place that no other group in the world has, no other group. People don't listen to any group as unquestioningly as they do to scientists. But here is something you should know. Scientists are not the same as science, any more than clergy were the same as religion. There were a lot of bad clergy, as we well know. A lot of corrupt clergy, as we well know. Some clergy are awesome. Some scientists are awesome. But scientists run the gamut with regard to decency and truth, the same as baseball players, the same as chiropractors. You name it. Scientists are all over the place in terms of honesty, decency, you name it. This is not an attack on scientists. It's just to say they're no different than anybody else. They're not the clergy of science. So when I hear a scientist give advice, I'm not sure it's unbiased. I'm not sure that it's only science-based. I'm not sure of anything. When the Mayo Clinic, one of the most prestigious medical institutions in America, puts on its website, there is no difference in danger between cigars and cigarettes. And I'm only using this as an example because I happen to know it's a lie. It's 100% lie. Cigarettes are far more dangerous than cigars. Why do they do it? Because they think they're doing good. So they lie on behalf of goodness. That's what they think. That's how they justify that lie. I'll give you another lie. Cancer societies years ago would say women, they would exaggerate the likelihood of women getting breast cancer. And they admitted it later. And why? They wanted to scare women into getting mammograms. You're allowed to lie to do good. So I the only thing I am interested in what a scientist tells me is what he knows scientifically, period. Not the advice. Now, yes, my doctor, of course I want his advice, obviously. Doctors saved my life. My brother's a doctor. I have zero against doctors. I have gratitude that I wouldn't be here talking to you without doctors. But when it comes to wisdom and advice, I'm not sure why they should be the people up there. In the United States of America, do you know who runs the armed forces? Not a general, not an admiral, not anyone in the military. A civilian called the President of the United States. They're called the Commander-in-Chief. Now, why would that be? Does the civilian president of the United States, a politician in most cases, know more about military logistics, battles, equipment? Of course not. But we don't want those people to make the ultimate military decisions. We want a civilian to. That's the case here too. I want civilians to make, people that we've entrusted with wisdom. Now, you may believe this guy has wisdom or this guy or this woman. That's fine. That's a separate issue. But I don't regard them as a holy group or any better than any other group. They simply know more science. That's all they do. But just as you, I wouldn't assume that if somebody knows more Bible, they are necessarily more wonderful, kind, decent, and wise than anybody else. And I'm religious. So that's welcome to the real world. It's a complex place. Say complex place 5 times. All right, everybody. Looking forward to your reactions. And in the meantime, do what you can to make this time that you're stuck in your home meaningful. And remember my first rule. If you're with people, you have to have a happy disposition. You owe it to the people who are stuck living with you. That's why my basic belief about happiness, it's a moral obligation. You could see that in my video for PragerU. And talking about the videos, why don't you watch more of the fireside chats that have nothing to do with the virus and the videos and Candace Owens and Michael Knowles and Will Witt. We got a lot of wonderful stuff up at PragerU. So until next week, take care of yourself. Thank you for watching. I'm Dennis Prager. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.